deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leadershield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Sirius XM Sports presents...
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, Hour 3, At the Races. Sirius XM, Andy Serling joins us from the New York Racing Association, fresh from a fabulous Thanksgiving holiday weekend.
Fantastic holiday weekend. The only thing that missing from my holiday weekend was I didn't get to come to the big soiree at the big house for Thanksgiving.
I think I was so close, and I still didn't go.
I'm personally ashamed of myself.
You should be. And we left. We did
so
leave.
Many reasons. Yeah.
Well, we left a chair open, just like Elijah. And
right. That might be the first funny thing you actually ever said. It might be the first time you actually had a right to laugh at your own bad jokes.
Hey now. Oh.
I was thinking of those old Elijah the Prophet episodes on Saturday Night Live, right?
Oh my God. Haven't even...
They're funny. Yeah, they were very funny. You remember those, right? It's a long time ago.
Long time ago.
I go back a long way.
That's true. You're an old soul.
I tell you, I am just. I mean, I really barely been able to get out of bed. You know, with turf racing done for the season, because I know we really went out with a bang.
Well,
that poor turf course. That turf course. You know what that turf course reminds me of? It's like the turf course equivalent of how you used to feel on after the closing day at Saratoga. We were running six day a week meets. You know, like, you know, I used to leave the track like Willie Loman on Monday with my back. You know, feeling like that's how that turf course. You know, you guys just beat the hell out of me for like the last 2.5 months. Can I please take the winter off? It was rough go. I mean, you know, not only did we have 2.5 straight months of racing, but we had a ton of rain. And, you know, it's funny because that obviously, I mean, in some ways, it's okay. But, you know, like if we were going to have a bad run of weather during our turf season, maybe this was the best time to have for us from a business standpoint. But on the other hand, I don't think we ever got a fair chance to really see how would our numbers compare. You know, actually compare to run if we had run at Belmont. I mean, I think it's clear we would have been down. The question is how much we would have been down, because, you know, we've had these Belmont meets before in the fall where it starts raining early in the meet. And, you know, once it continues to rain through like two weekends, you really do have a deleterious effect on your handle because people just get disgusted. And I don't blame them to a certain extent and say, oh, it's raining in New York every day. They're off the turf. You know, I don't want to look. And, you know, and then Keeneland opens this case, which just sort of exacerbates the situation. And people, you know, look elsewhere because there isn't as much turf racing, and New York racing thrives on turf racing. So, you know, you have that snowball effect where you're probably going to be down a little bit to begin with. And then it just sort of snowballed. And the unfortunate part of it was we've had these really, really strong meets at Aqueduct in November, the last few years at least. And the racing's been sensational and the handle numbers have reflected it. And it just, you lost that kind of edge. You could almost equate it in a way. It's not the same thing, but it's the mistake that Gulfstream made when they went to full gear racing and they would just sort of announce to people our fake championship meet starts on December 3rd or whatever. And then they would do no handle through December because the public saw Gulfstream as back then, you know, a January through March racing season. And much like Saratoga, where, you know, things wouldn't really pick up as far as attendance and stuff until August, Gulfstream meet has never really picked up much before January. And I think I would like to think that's one of the reasons they've sort of postponed the start of their, you know, big meet until the end of December. And I think, unfortunately, I understand why the landscape changed. I understand why they race year round, but there were very few days of the year as big as opening day at Gulfstream. And it wasn't just because I went there, even when I stopped going for the full meet. You so look forward to that meet starting. You know, you've been at Calder for a long period of time in the anticipation and for good reason. And that sort of went away when they went to full year racing. And I think we lost that by being at Aqueduct. It's nobody's fault. You know, you've got to take some pain to make things better. I mean, it's our fault, but it's you're doing it for, you know, for a good reason.
Sure.
You know, you can't fix it and can't make things better without, you know, swallowing a little bit of pain. And I think we appreciate in the trainers that, you know, and owners that, particularly the owners and people that, you know, it definitely isn't as good as it could have been for them, but we're doing it for a reason. And the end goal will be substantial. So it's fine. But unfortunately, because of the weather, we didn't get to really see how the numbers stacked up, you know?
Yeah.
That's the way it goes. It's listen, you know, the truth is we've been very fortunate overall. Think about Belmont Week. Remember how it was supposed to pour on Belmont Stakes Day?
Yes, yes.
And there was horrible weather reports, and it just changed, you know, and yep. It ended up being another day. And it could have been a lot worse. So, you know, we've had a very, you know, we've had a huge run of good luck where we haven't had rainouts on big Saturdays in Saratoga. And, you know, that can change quite easily. It's just random. It's not, you know, it's not like somebody says, well, it rains less on Saturday than it does on Tuesday. We've been very fortunate. It's going to change. You know, we're going to look stupid in Saratoga one of these summers when we get a bunch of rain. You know, we're not as smart as we think we are, and we're not as dumb as we think.
You always say that. That's.
I think that Bill Nader is the first one to say, you know, the same idiots that run Saratoga are the same geniuses that run Saratoga, the idiots that run Aqueduct, the winter, you know. In a result-oriented world, you know, you're a genius for when things go well and a moron when they go badly. And the truth always lies somewhere in the middle.
I was very excited. Bill Nader followed me on Twitter yesterday.
Wow. So what are you up to, 187 followers?
Yes, 89, I think.
The idea that you noticed that Bill followed you, I don't even know if he follows me.
How could he not follow you?
I don't know. He didn't want to hire me when I just asked him for work when he worked in Iris.
Oh, hey now.
He's following me.
Separately from the exciting following from Bill, who's of course now heading up the TOC, and I anticipate a Nader visit to talk about TOC issues. But
he's on the show, hasn't he? He must have been on the show a million times.
Well, not in a long time though.
Recently, right?
Not because he went back to Hong Kong and
he's a big mocker again.
He's
know?
A big mocker. He's a mocker de tutti mocker.
He's a good guest. I mean,
of course, he's a good guest. Quick aside, you did reference Willie Loman, and that does make me want to ask: have you seen this new revival with Wendell Pierce?
Oh, Death of a Salesman. Yeah. You know, I haven't been to the theater very much in years. It's not because of the pandemic. I saw the Lehman trilogy last year. No, I don't. You know what? I didn't see it when Philip Seymour Hoffman did it, and I didn't see it when Dustin Hoffman did it. I've seen it.
I saw what's his name, the big guy, Brian Dennehy.
Eli Wallach?
No, Brian Dennehy.
I saw, where did I see him in? Long Day's Journey, maybe? He was in a play with my friend Aiden once that I saw. I can't remember what play it was. It was The Public.
Dennehy was good. He seemed physically he seemed kind of imposing to be Willie Loman, but he won a Tony. He won a Tony, I remember, for it. But Wendell Pierce, I love from The Wire, and I
gotta watch The Wire. I'm embarrassed. It's amazing because Homicide was like my favorite show. I have no idea why I didn't watch The Wire. It's sort of stupid. And I know I'm gonna start watching one day on HBO and sort of, you know, end up just beating myself up that it took me so long, but I guess I'm looking forward to it, and I'll watch it. You know, I wish I had bought tickets for that Robert Moses thing with Ralph Fiennes that's playing. That's apparently the hottest ticket in town. I didn't even know about it. It's funny, a friend of mine was texting me about it the other night. He had the same thought. Why? How did we not know about this? But I didn't.
There's a funny thing about that. In fact, my son Spencer.
Can you get me tickets to it?
Yeah, sure I can.
Can you?
Of course I can.
Okay, I want to.
My brother's the biggest press agent on Broadway.
I know. Okay,
these days. But my son saw it, Spencer, and he thought Ralph Fiennes was great. Jamie said at Thanksgiving, he said everybody says the show itself, the material is awful, but Fiennes is terrific. That Fiennes is terrific.
He always is. You know, I saw him do Coriolanus at BAM in Brooklyn a bunch of years ago, and it might be one of the best things I've ever seen.
Wow.
It was really incredible. It's funny, one of the best Shakespeare I ever saw, my friend Sarah was talking about it, so we saw it together, was A Twelfth Night at Lincoln Center. And it was with Helen Hunt, and I didn't realize this, but Ernie told me this, that mentioned me that Paul Rudd was also in it, which I didn't remember. But it was an incredible staging of it, more than anything else, the people in it.
I remember that because my friend Vaskin Matiosian, who's very friendly with Helen Hunt, I remember the production from that period. And I'll give a, you know, I mentioned Dennehy. It's very funny. We watched the other night, Thanksgiving, they've been running the Rambo movie, First Blood, on one of the cables.
You were supposed to be the original star of that, weren't you?
Well, I didn't think, I thought it was too physical, too physically demanding for me. I wanted something a little more, you know, something a little more intellectual. I'm still waiting.
You're thinking of like a very, an erudite Rambo, less manly and more yeah, bring out the softer side of Rambo.
Well, it got me to talk about Brian Dennehy while we were watching.
He was also going to be in Rambo. Was he in Rambo?
He was in Rambo. He's the bad sheriff. He's the bad cop.
You don't actually think I ever saw a Rambo movie, do you?
Well, Rambo's more than just Rambo's. Got some, Rambo's okay. What was the other movie we discussed
the other day that you haven't seen
that I was aghast? Oh, Miracle on 34th Street. You promised you were going to see this week.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
I never promised you I was going to see it. In fact, I said I probably wouldn't see it.
No, you said you
I
would.
I was watching. Somebody put up. Oh, who put? Who tweeted it? Was it? What's his name? The guy we like about the alternate. Rex Chapman put it up. The Saturday Night Live alternate ending to it's a Wonderful Life where they beat Old Man Potter to death. Anyway, is there something about racing that we can discuss?
There is, but I got to get my Brian Dennehy story in.
Oh Jesus!
Go ahead. All right, I'm sitting.
If I nod off during it, don't.
It's a very short story. I'm sitting at O'Hare, waiting for a flight, and all of a sudden, you know, you know how those benches, you know, those seats, those crafted seats, and you know, you're sitting. All of a sudden, the whole thing like jostles. And a hulking human being sits down next to me, and I look to my right,
and it was Gary Sheehan.
No, it's bigger. it was Brian Dennehy. And I looked at him, and then I looked back, and I said, "You're Brian Dennehy." He said, "Yeah."
He said, "You're Steve Vick."
No, not no, there
Did
was.
I hate your show.
No, he just said, "Yeah." That was it. I met Brian Dennehy.
Wow, big moment for you.
Well, now listen, compared to you, who dines next to, you know, all kinds of celebrities on a regular basis, I can't compete.
Unlike you, I don't bother them.
I didn't bother him. I just said,
I think the only celeb that I ever talked to at Lux was Michael Moore.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I was the bar. It was like late on a Sunday. There was nobody sort of there, and he was waiting to go for dinner. So it was right after he had written that funny letter to George Bush, the funny letter about his mother.
Oh, my God.
About Enron. And I talked to him about it, yeah. He was very nice, actually. He talked for a while.
That's too funny. I met Mr. T at O'Hare.
Really?
Yeah.
I saw Manute Bol in the airport in Las Vegas once.
I'll give you the best airport. The best airport.
Better than Mr. T?
Mr. T was
pretty great celebrity.
It really was. And let me tell you something. The children flocked to him and were all around him. And he was so nice to everybody.
I thought he was supposed to be really nice.
Unbelievable.
Right?
It was really cool. And it was in his heyday, too. When
let me ask you a question. Do you ever have Hammer on your show?
Which Hammer?
MC Hammer.
You know, I have not had Hammer, and I by all rights,
You really should. You're right. He was such a great phenomenon. I always remember when he used to come to Belmont and talk about the kids.
Yep.
You know, I think it was one of those races, the Koshy Club or the Mother Goose. It was a Koshy Club where apparently he'd gone across the street where the kids were playing basketball and, like, hung out with them. He was, like, you know, he stopped for every kid to sign an autograph. He was really great. You should have him on.
I will. I'm glad you said that.
You should find a way. I mean, that video, which I'm sure so many people have seen, but if nobody's ever watched the Coaching Club with Hammer, it's on YouTube.
With the leather vest.
Taking his vest off and, you know, with Suge and like the Phipps kids next to him. I mean, it's one of the greatest scenes ever. I mean, I remember. I was there. I remember it vividly. But it's pretty great to watch the video. We've shown it in the show, as a matter of fact.
The mother of all gooses.
This was the Coaching Club.
Okay, that's right.
Who called it the mother of, I think Leroy Jolly called it the mother of
Leroy,
right?
Leroy did, and of course, one of the great introductions of two people from different walks of life, Hammer meeting Lee Jolly and saying, "Leroy, you're the first white man I ever met named Leroy."
Is that true?
That's 100% true.
Yeah. He made that bet. Anyway, yeah.
Oh my God! Well, we're totally sidetracked here.
At least it was about racing.
All right. Well, thanks to you. You worked it around. There were some notable performances actually, and we should touch on. I had Famous on yesterday. Famous Amos. How about showing up here with that filly and winning the Comley?
Now I haven't discussed this with Tom. But was there some reference to him make a comment? It was the best tour, like something about the best filly he'd ever trained, but some kind of like that. Like he's already forgotten Serengeti Empress. Because if I find comments like that, I'm going to torture him literally for the rest of his life.
Well, there's tons of those comments, including yesterday he reiterated again that she's the best horse he's ever been around.
How quickly he forgot. Poor Serengeti Empress. I wish I had Joel Politi's number. Really, I'd have to give him a call.
I'll send it to you in 2 seconds.
We should probably have intervention for Tom. So this is a horse he's not going to like the buyers, right? He's going to turn the buyers because she's got an 81. She's a very promising horse. And listen, I hope she ends up being a champion. I kid about Tom, but Tom's a great friend and somebody who I root for every day. He's great. He really is. I mean, you talk about the friends I've made through racing and then the TV show is in this case, Tom Amos is high on that list. The people I'm very happy to be friends with because of racing, because of the TV show. Having said that, I'll take a wait and see approach. She's just not running fast races. And I don't get caught up in that. She won so easily because as we know, a lot of times when they have to go faster, they can. It is a two-year-old filly division that is screaming for good horses, because with all due respect to Wonder Wheel, who's a really nice horse, as is this horse, who's your filly, they're still not that fast. There's a lot of time and a lot of room for them to improve, and they very well may. But, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I mean, you know, British Idiom, who people are talking about, and she was a champion, she was slow, and she never won again, you know, so we'll see. And I really hope that she turns out to be a superstar. And I'm always rooting for Tom, and she's obviously run well in her races, but she's not running races that are fast enough for me to get too overwhelmed by her. And I say this as somebody who really hopes that she ends up, you know, being terrific. I mean, imagine how great it would be to have her in the Alabama as one of the favorites with Tom, and Tom being the show. And, you know, listen, he's, you know, Tom's a wonderful guy. You know, I can speak for anybody that knows Tom. He's really one of my favorite people. He and Colleen are terrific, but I want to see this horse get faster.
Well, and I, how about a sidebar very quickly, helping people understand the two figs from the two-year-old races Saturday?
Oh, it's for Andy to explain, and there's some argument that smart people might say, well, I don't know why you would give the colt a higher number. You know, they did run a lot slower. Listen, I don't make figures. I don't know exactly what you do, but all you have to do is look at the paces. I mean, it's from 47 to 50, right? I mean, they went like 3 seconds slower pretty much the 6 furlongs, and over like 2 seconds to the mile. So it's very hard to judge the two races. I don't think the boys' race was that special either. So it's very hard to judge what they were. So I do understand. I mean, I don't even want to understand the idiocy from people on Twitter that criticize the buyer figures that don't understand them, as though somehow they're some sort of evil thing. I do think it's likely that the boys are faster than the girls. The race was a lot slower, but the pace played such a huge role. It's so hard for me to judge. I think from what we've seen from Hoosier Philly, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, she was running against Wonder Wheel in December if she beat her. But I'm not going to be surprised if Wonder Wheel doesn't turn out to be a major player in the division next year either. I won't be surprised if she does, you know, and I won't be surprised if this horse does. But right now you have a lot of people getting really excited. People are overly impressed by big margins and horses that win with relative ease. I still believe at the end of the day, the time is the thing that matters. The relative time is what matters the most. And we've just seen too many horses over the year that winning races easily, that when they get in situations where they're under more pressure, they can't really go faster. We've all seen horses that can.
Right.
I'm not saying that they can't. I'm not ruling it out. I'm just saying this, she could have or he could have gone faster, is a very, very dicey area. But, you know, at some point she's going to get challenged. She's going to run against much better horses. And I hope she passed with flying colors. I'm rooting for her. But you have to separate your friendships from your analysis. You cannot allow your friendships, your relationships, to infiltrate how you analyze races.
No,
I'll pick against her, and then I'll be happy when I'm wrong. You know what I mean? It's not. I do it all the time.
Well, that's the critical, you know, the critical thinking, and that's what made the flight line performance so gratifying. Because those, you know, that said, well, let's see him do it against a horse of equal ability in terms of stretching speed.
I mean, I think we all have Life is Good to thank for running the race that he did,
yes,
to enable us to see just how good Flightline was. I think it's a very good point. And the other thing is, what good is your opinion if you're just saying it to try to validate what your friend wants you to say? Anybody, you know, this notion of somebody that gets mad at me because I didn't pick their horse, or vice versa, you know, thinks I liked them because I liked their horse. One has nothing to do with the other. I mean, it's not the way the world works. You can be rooting for people you like and know. And let me tell you something. I'm not rooting against anybody that's putting up big money to buy horses in this game.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a job because of these people.
That's right.
I'm not such an asshole that I don't think that, don't recognize that, you know? I do recognize that. And I have great appreciation of the people that put their money up to buy the horses. And I think we all should. Every one of us that earns a living this game, whether you're a rider or a trainer or you work at the track, you know, I mean, we all benefit from people using their money to buy horses, or there's no game. So I don't root against these people. I want to see them do well. But I also might root against them in a race because I'm betting against them. But I root against my friends when I'm betting. And then the race is over. I'm happy if they beat me. Well, if I lost, I might as well lose to somebody I'm friends with. You know, it's not. And it's you just can't allow your personal opinions to affect your handicapping. You just can't. It's completely fraudulent to do that, especially if you're somebody who's giving out opinions on the air. And I you know, it's hard sometimes, but you have to find a way. Otherwise, you shouldn't be doing your job, frankly. You know, if I'm going to sit there and pick every Klarovich horse because I'm friends with Seth, it's ridiculous, you know?
Yep. Yeah.
I'm just not going to do it.
No, it's
and you shouldn't do it, you know? And your opinion should be as unbiased as possible. It's hard. It is. It's hard for you. You have these people in your show. You're friendly with them. Do you want to say, I don't like somebody's horse, the guy you have, the guy in after the show, and he's going to say, oh, well, Steve, you didn't like my horse. But hopefully people get beyond that, you know?
Yes. Yeah, hope so.
I'm not sure why they would want me to pick their horses. Even if I'm doing well, I'm not right that often. Same people that say I suck and never pick a winner are mad when I don't pick their horse. You know? Be happy. You'd be celebrating when I don't pick their horse. Anyway, but it's, you know, but I, you know, I mean, the topic of Tom's horse, I hope she does really well, but I'm.
You'll take a wait and see.
Yeah, I'm not going to say I'm not a bit impressed by her, but I'm not falling over myself. She's just not running fast enough.
He didn't object yesterday when I said that, you know, she's got to get faster, you know, with added responsibility and as a 3-year-old. I don't think he doubts that. But I think he just feels that she's got an abundance of talent and she'll adjust and she is got the, certainly from a style standpoint, she doesn't feel like a horse that is an open mouth runaway. No,
I agree. She doesn't need a lead. She has. Yeah. No, I agree. Liz, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic. I mean, you know, most trainers would be very happy to trade places with Tom. I'm interested to see what Julia Shining does this week in the Demoiselle, the foal de Malathot. And she had that visually impressive debut, and it wasn't super fast, but it was fast enough given the trip to suggest that she's pretty talented. You know, and she's going to always have so much sort of spotlight on her because she's a foal de Malathot and because of what Malathot has done throughout her career.
Sure.
But I'm curious to see who she does. But listen, I mean, I think the nice thing about a horse like Hoosier Filly and potentially a Julia Stiles and some other horses out there as well, there is so much room in that division. You know, I don't think anybody's going, you know, I mean, look at the boys. Obviously, Fort is really, really good. I still think Cave Rock is very good. I don't think he ran he ran terribly. But he's a good horse, you know what I mean? He's a really good horse. So, am I going to say he's unusually good for a 2-year-old champion? No, but he's a legitimately good 2-year-old champion. You know, he's not some sort of mediocrity that backed his way into it. He flat out deserves. I mean, more than deserves it. He's a legitimate champion type horse, and he's the right horse to be favored right now going forward. Who knows what he's going to do? You know, but right now Wonder Wheel is a legitimate deserving champion as well, but she is not so fast that I'm going to be surprised when she gets usurped by others. I also won't be surprised when she doesn't. Yeah. She has just as much right to improve as the others do, and she's already better than most of them right now.
Exactly. You'd rather be in that position than having to improve.
Right. And the good thing for the 3-year-old, 2-year-old fillies is in America is they'll never on the grass won't have to worry about running against Meditate, I would guess, against. Meditate or Mediate, whatever is Mediate, I think.
No, Meditate. Meditate.
Man, she was tremendous.
Yes, she was.
Yeah.
Andy, I appreciate it. Outstanding.
We're done. I had so much fun. I didn't even know how much time passed.
Because this was you. You know,
who's on next?
Daryl Vienna.
Okay, that's great. Who's the best horse Daryl Vienna ever trained?
Hopefully he'll say one of the ones that he had for the late Jed Cohen. That could be.
All right. I don't want to hold it up anymore. See you later, Steve.
Andy Serling, everybody, the New York Racing Association. And as mentioned, we're going to pay tribute to Jed Cohen, who has been a, when I tell you, a stalwart. You've seen his horses for a long time, but what he meant and what the family means to California racing is pronounced. I just was trying to reach Daryl there, and we're going to have to try again, I think. I just sent him a text, so I don't know why this number, maybe I may have dialed the wrong. Yeah, I did. Boy, oh boy. All right, hang in there for us, folks, for a second, and I will go in this direction. Because, of course, now, you know, he's Daryl's plying the legal trade, and we'll talk to Daryl Vienna this morning about Jed Cohen. Daryl, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
You know, I hate to have to call you with this, but Jed, 89, and had been in declining health, but somebody that, I mean, just absolutely was a stalwart on the West Coast and a devotee of the game for decades.
That's correct. He was, his passion was horse racing and horses.
Take us back to the origins and your dealings with him.
Well, I began training for Jed in the mid to late 1980s, and he was a very unusual and exceptional man. For example, as a trainer, when one of your horses is injured or needs rest, you have to make that tough and oftentimes dreaded but necessary call to give the owner the bad news. With Jed, making that call was neither tough nor dreaded because he understood racing and he loved horses. So he was never one to bemoan his fate or his bad luck. He just wanted always to do the best for the horses. If a horse needed a rest or time off, he was not only happy to give it, he insisted upon it. If a horse was to be retired, he always required that we find the horse a good home. He never was the kind of owner that would ask the question, can we get one more race from the horse? If you were a racehorse, I don't think you could have had a better owner than Jed. And if you were a trainer, you couldn't have a better client than Jed. When I, on my retirement in 2016, when I transferred horses to Jed's new trainers, I told them, I predicted that you will experience with Jed something that you probably never experienced, that you've never had a better owner or will never have a better owner. And since that time, over the last 6 years or so, I've had the opportunity to confer with those trainers again, and to a man, they've confirmed my prediction. Jed was an extraordinary handicapper, a very unusual race analyst. He was an out-of-the-box thinker. And when you think you know everything about watching horse races, you could always learn something from Jed. My relationship with Jed was really, really unusual and oftentimes exciting. When I was training for Jed, I spoke with him almost every day for 30 years. Mm. And I looked forward to those calls. First, we would talk about the individual horses and what we were planning and just how they were training. And then we would talk about racing in general, horses in other barns that were doing something of import. And then we'd talk about current events, the stock market, politics. It was always an interesting conversation. And after I retired from training, while we didn't speak every day, we spoke often and regularly. What can I say about Jed? He was an extraordinary listener, intellectually curious, and wanted to know more all the time, to learn, to absorb the knowledge of what little knowledge I could give him. He was a brilliant man. He was wise, gentle, kind. He cared for people. He was interested in people. And with Jed, when you began, what began as a business relationship with Jed was became a personal relationship. Now, his son, Tim, who, by the way, has done an extraordinarily fine job in building and managing Jed's stable. I think he said it best when he said Jed's greatest joy in racing victories was the joy of others. And that, I think, tells the story of Jed. He was interested in people, and he was exalted by changing people's lives for the better. He was a man the like of which I probably will never see again. I can't say enough good about him, because there was really, I never experienced any bad. It was always the greatest experience.
Beautifully put. Daryl Vienna joining us to pay tribute to Jed Cohen. And of course, all of us have watched the Rancho Temescal, Red Baron's barn horses, and really the operation, Daryl, is, you know, gets bigger and bigger and more prominent on the West Coast. I don't know much about the Cohen family's backstory. I think their origin was in the East. What business interest did Jed have that brought him out west and you know, that got him involved in racing?
Well, I think that Jed, based on things that he had reported to me, he was interested in racing. His father was interested in racing. I think Tim told this story about how Jed's father, together with some of his cronies, would put together 50 cents to get to a $2 wager to bet on horses. And that probably was the start of Jed. I don't think he raced in the East. I think when he came to California is when he actually became a horse owner. He was a sportsman in the truest sense of the word. And racing was a big part of his life. I don't know what would have occupied his mind if he didn't have racing. But as I recall, the trainer that I remember associated with Jed was a trainer named Riley Kofer. That was in the years before I was even a trainer. I was following racing, but wasn't even thinking about being a trainer. And then in the late 80s, I can't recall how it happened, but Jed and I came in contact, and from the late 80s on until my retirement is in 2016, Jed was, a mainstay of the stable. Interestingly enough, we started buying horses in Europe, and I think all of the group winners that Jed and I had together were, I can't think of one that wasn't an import. And I think that trend has continued with Tim managing the stable, Tim being Jed's son. And I think Tim has expanded the scope of the stable, and he's done really an extraordinary job. I'm so proud of Tim and how he's fulfilled to a great extent his dad's dreams.
The game, the patriarchs of the game, the importance, can't be overstated. But having someone to pass it to, and someone that that provides continuity, and in some cases, even expands on the origin. Very important because you know there's been too many in recent years that leave the game and leave the landscape, and sons or daughters just don't have an interest. So it's wonderful that Tim will carry it on.
Yeah, I mean I don't know what Tim's plans are, but based on my interaction with Tim, I have a pretty strong feeling that I think that the Cohen Racing establishment, I hesitate, but it's probably an appropriate word, the Cohen Racing Empire is going to go on at least for another generation. And, I'm glad to see that. And I think Jed would be appreciative and thankful that his interest and development of racing stable continues.
Well, and of course, most recently we think about, Mark Glatt's work for them with Dr. Scheivel and also Jeff Mullins, who has had horses with them for, I think even may have overlapped with you going back a few years. What was the best horse for you that you had for him?
Probably Janet. Janet was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she was. She came to us from England, but as a maiden. I think she'd had one or two races. The backstory on Janet was that she was a very nervous, almost unruly filly. She came to California and ended up winning over $1 million in a number of graded races. So that was, I think, it was an interesting story because, in a sense, it was a horse that Jed got to see develop, and he was really instrumental in determining where she'd be running. We would talk about it, and he always had great hopes for her. And I'm glad, I was very happy then, and I'm happy now looking back that she fulfilled his dreams.
I saw her, Daryl. You brought her to Saratoga one year.
I believe so. I'm getting older now myself. I don't remember a lot of things.
No, she was a great one. She was maybe a yellow ribbon type winner, I think.
Yes.
She was a very, very nice horse, Janet. I'm glad you mentioned her. Wow.
I think one of his favorites also was a horse called Swanses. He was a grade one winner in Europe. And when we brought him here, he was, I think his first race was going to be at Arlington Park, and an unfortunate incident occurred there. He kicked a enclosure gate at the stakes barn, which was made of thin metal, and he actually kicked through it, and in withdrawing his foot, he severed a number of ligaments and tendons below the ankle, and he was given a pretty poor prognosis for ever running again, but Jed gave him all of the medical and veterinary care he needed, and about, I think, a year later, we were able to start training him. And although he was a horse that I don't think he ever really could fully push off that leg, he was so talented, he would just run. And he ended up winning San Francisco Mile and I believe a pretty big race in Texas. He was a horse that Jed really liked. I think he liked him because he had overcome this adversity. Although he liked all of his horses, I think there's a special place in his heart for Swanses.
Really nice. And Swanses went on to a stallion career, right?
Good
career.
Yes. I think a decent one.
Yeah.
Actually, he went to be honest with you, Jed and I had a long conversation about standing a stud in California, and especially one of Swanses' background. Swanses was an extraordinary racehorse, but with a mediocre pedigree. And my counsel to Jed was that those kind of horses rarely made great sires. But I think he just liked the horse, and he was hopeful to see a baby Swanses that would replicate the ability of his father. He was a decent sire, but he never got what he was.
I still see you see Swanses show up in pedigrees.
Right.
I mean, I I'm just looking at him now, actually. He won the Dallas Turf Cup. He won the, as you mentioned, he won the San Francisco Breeders' Mile as well. Mm-hmm. And actually, before he came to the U.S., he won the Jean Pratt at Chantilly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had high hopes for him. I think you have to, I mean, to be fair, his campaign in California or in the U.S. after coming out was compromised by that old injury. But you know, he moved soundly. It had to affect him. That hind ankle was always a bit enlarged, and he moved soundly, and he lived with it, and he loved to run.
Well, I only ever talked about the horses with the trainers, but have got just had tremendous respect for Jed Cohen and for the operation, and I couldn't let his passing go. And we'll certainly, when we get a chance to talk to Mark Glatt, in fact, Glatt with a winner over the weekend, I can get a chance to talk to Mark about the red carpet win the other day. Daryl, even under the circumstances, I always appreciate the opportunity to visit with you. Thank you.
Okay, Steve, thank you.
Daryl Viena, everybody, and Jed Cohen, Rancho Temescal, and Red Baron's Barn that you see. Let me try Erin, too. We've only got a couple of minutes, but I think we've got her now. Erin Crady, just about 4 minutes to close out Giving Tuesday. And Thoroughbred Charities of America, of course, TCA. Erin, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. We just got a couple of minutes, running a little bit late. We had a full morning. But I talked earlier to Stacy Clark Rogers on the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance side. Give everybody some pointers as to how they can make their Giving Tuesday donations go as far as possible today when helping either human or equine interests around the industry.
That's right. Thank you. We appreciate it. TCA, Thoroughbred Charities of America, we are a grant-making organization providing grants to approved charities working in both thoroughbred aftercare and health and human services for backstretch and farm workers. So we are 100% charitable based. We don't receive funding from any mandated sources, so days like Giving Tuesday are very important to us. So we would certainly appreciate any support and donations on this day of charitable giving across our country. TCA.org is the best way to reach us. There's a donate button there on our website. And we certainly appreciate any support.
Well, and usually, of course, we talk to Erin when it comes to some of their biggest fundraising initiatives, including the Stallion Auction. Give everybody a sampling, Erin, of who the recipients of the grants typically are year to year.
Sure. Each year we support organizations, as I mentioned, working in both thoroughbred aftercare as well as health and human services for backstretch and farm workers. So on the aftercare side, we're talking about organizations like Old Friends, New Vocations, Second Stride, Cantor, the Retired Racehorse Project, Charlestown Aftercare. There's several grant recipients, and they are all on our website. This year we granted to 49 aftercare organizations, and then on the backstretch and farm worker side, we granted to 17 organizations, and those are organizations like Belmont Child Care, the Racetrack Chaplaincies of America, Backside Learning Center there at Churchill Downs, Bluegrass Farms Charities here in Lexington. It's quite a long list, and we really believe strongly in supporting both the horses and the humans in our industry.
Well, and one thing we should suggest as well, and I mentioned the Stallion Auction, which comes up in January. Anybody that's standing a stallion regionally, the opportunity to donate to Seasons, a great way to give on sort of the front end through the back end.
That's exactly right. We are prepping for our annual stallion season auction. The online portion begins on January 4th and runs through January 6th. And then, of course, we have our live select season auction there on January 8th in Lexington. But we are currently in solicitation mode, so we are accepting season donations now. There's a form on our website, tca.org, if you'd like to donate a season. We would certainly appreciate that. And we haven't started promoting many of our seasons yet, but a little breaking news for you, Steve. We will actually have a flight line season in our select season auction there on January 8th. Yeah, we're excited about that one.
Wow.
We've also got
Maxfield,
Nyquist, Quality Road, Constitution. So we're already, you know, lining up some big ones for our live auction there on January 8th.
Well, you're always my first week back after vacation. Aaron Crady always joins us, but I thought today a unique opportunity, tca.org. Aaron, I appreciate it and all the great work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Aaron Crady and Thoroughbred Charities of America. So whatever you do, give something today, small, large, a season to flight line, if you got one. thanks to Aaron. Thanks to Daryl Vienna to pay tribute to Jed Cohen and Andy for a really fun visit. Earlier, of course, Mike Stidham was with us and Stacy Clark Rogers. My God, what else? Who else? It's been a nutty morning. I'm forgetting something. Too much. Pack too much into these 3 hours. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Back Wednesday, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. Little Hong Kong action tomorrow from the Valley that's happy. I'll talk to you in the morning. Replay 6 to 9. Archive, etc. Talk to you tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're...